When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark with Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And since the two of us are together in front of a couple of microphones, you got Stuff You Should Know.
That's right.
The, is it an award that we won on iTunes? At the very least, we won a vote.
Yeah, the vote-winning podcast.
Yeah. Popular podcast, that's what we can call ourselves.
Yeah. Have we won an award? Are we award-winning?
No.
No?
Nope.
Okay.
Maybe someone at home will make us an award and send it in.
We've been awarded a podcast, so we are award-winning.
There you go.
Yes.
Yes. So that's this, what we're about to do. And I think it's becoming painfully obvious why we haven't won any awards the more we talk about this.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You doing good?
I'm great.
You getting psyched for Comic-Con? It's
yeah.
coming in like 2 days, dude.
Well, by the time this is out, we'll be like long since have pooped our pants on stage and laughed at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye. The horror.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm excited, though. Sure. San Diego. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's go right now.
Yes. Just wait a day. In the meantime, Chuck, I have a proposal that we speak about the Musketeers.
Let's hear it. The intro, that is.
Oh, the intro.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not handling this one by myself.
Yeah, just take it away.
God, can you imagine how long that episode would be? If I just discoursed on the Musketeers alone without you, it'd just keep going and going.
An infinite loop.
Hey, have you ever heard of a little candy company named Mars?
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think it's M&M's Mars, but back then it was just Mars.
My stars, how does Mars make such wonderful candy bars?
How old are you?
I'm 41, and my grandfather used to say that. It brings back, like, great memories. That was, like, one of the things Granddaddy Mills did.
Oh, I'm sorry to tarnish it with sarcasm.
No, that's all right.
Okay, well, this company, Mars, that mm-hmm. your grandfather liked, and rightly so,
sure.
Mars Bar is one of the greatest all-time candy bars ever.
Meh.
You're crazy if you say meh.
What's in a Mars Bar?
Nougat, caramel, almonds. It's just this great melange of flavors. The almonds are what really do it.
Meh.
It's like the thinking man's Snickers.
Throw some peanut butter in there, and I'm on board.
Hey, I'm with you, too.
Okay.
Well, this is long before anybody ever thought to put peanut butter in anything besides maybe a sandwich.
Right.
It's 1932. The Mars Company released a candy that they called, very appropriately in my opinion, the Three Musketeers.
Okay.
Today, you pick up a Three Musketeers bar, you're like, what the hell does this mean?
Yeah.
Back then, you could very easily figure out what it meant because it was three pieces of milk chocolate-covered nougat in three different flavors, vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry.
Really?
Hence, Three Musketeers. Three different pieces, three different flavors.
So it was three different flavors all in one single wrapper.
Yes.
That's pretty ingenious.
So, like, you pulled the wrapper back, and you're like, oh, there's three.
Like, which one do I want
first? What a value.
Which one do I want to give to my little brother?
It was, you give your little brother probably the strawberry one.
Oh, is there, yeah.
Strawberry, vanilla, chocolate. It's like Neapolitan.
Sure. I didn't realize it. I had no idea that there were three. It makes sense now, because now when you open it up, you're like, I don't get it. It's one candy bar.
That's what I'm saying.
It's named after a novel, a classic novel.
Yes, it is. Thank you for that segue, because sure. I didn't know how I was going to get out of this one.
There you have it.
I'd whip myself into a quagmire. Today,
the classic novel.
Today, we've got Three Musketeers that are just the chocolate nougat. We have a classic novel written by Alexandre Dumas. I checked pronunciation. Don't even try me on that. I listened to a Frenchman. That's you.
Oh, really?
I listened to a Frenchman say it. There's this website called Forvo.com.
Yeah.
It's people's names.
I had
not
someone
just
send
words,
that in.
Names. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And one thing I realized reading this is I don't think we have, we don't get a lot of mail from the French.
No.
You ever notice that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder why. Do you think that there's probably not a French, not a lot of French listeners?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. We're beneath them.
Yeah. I don't think we're hitting their wheelhouse much.
It's like podcast.
Exactly. Not just podcasts. I think podcasts, like Marc Maron's huge in France. But
oh,
then
he?
Again, so is Jerry Lewis, so.
I guess if I was sitting around a cafe, like, by the river drinking wine, I wouldn't have an iPod anywhere near me.
I wouldn't.
I would throw it in the river and just, like, live my life.
You know where we are huge is India.
True.
Which is awesome to me.
Agreed.
Hey, India. Let's talk about The Three Musketeers, right? You said it was a novel by Alexandre Dumas.
Yeah, I mean, the really quick one sentence summation mm-hmm. is hick adventurer D'Artagnan moves out of the sticks and because he wants to join the famed musketeers, the guard.
The musketeers of the guard, yes.
The king's basically secret service right hand men.
Yes, special forces.
He wants
forces.
To join them. He goes there. He meets the three musketeers, uh-huh. Athos, Porthos, and Aramis. Uh-huh. And he eventually works his way into, I guess, to be the fourth musketeer.
Well, he presents himself with the opportunity to prove his valor and his courage and his skill by basically hanging around them.
Yeah, and along the way, there are duels and there's some lovemaking.
Yeah, I think this is the only article on HowStuffWorks.com that has the word lovemaking.
The fighting adventure and lovemaking.
And it's hyperlinked, too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
To what?
I would imagine sex.
Do an article on sex?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a great summation. There's no need to read The Three Musketeers or any of the other works by Dumas that feature The Three Musketeers, including The Man in the Iron Mask.
Oh, was that him?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I kind of figured, you know. Like, who else was writing that stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. He was...
He kind of had the market cornered. He was the John Grisham of his day.
He was the John Grisham, the Danielle Steele,
yeah.
And the Sue Grafton of his day.
Okay, well put.
Thanks.
The weird thing, I guess it's not too weird, is that he wrote this novel a couple of hundred years after the real action takes place, and it came out at a time when, you know how, you know... Later on, people have a real fascination with things that came before them.
Right.
Came out during the Romantic era
right.
in the 1840s where people were like, dude, swashbuckling and these outfits and the lovemaking. Like, give me more.
Right.
So it was really, really popular.
Right. And it was also popular because it was based on actual events featuring historical characters.
Yeah, all those dudes were real.
Yeah, D'Artagnan,
uh-huh.
He was a real person. And actually, the Three Musketeers that Dumas wrote was based on a semi-fictional memoir written about that guy who was a real musketeer of the guard who went on to great glory, actually. He became he traveled from the hinterlands, I think Gascony,
to join up the sticks,
eventually became commander of the musketeers of the guard.
But did they cover that in there was more than one book though, right?
Yeah, there were several.
Okay.
And the original book was serialized too. We'll talk about Dumas in a minute, right?
All right.
The point is that his work was based on real people, but it was super fictionalized and super romantic.
Yes, it was.
And all of it was based on the idea that in the 17th century, there was this new invention that gave rise to all of this, the musket.
Thank you, China.
Yes.
Like everything else almost on the planet that we have, thank you, China.
Right.
They were the leaders in pretty much everything back in the day. And around 1000, they invented a little something called gunpowder.
Yeah.
And you pack this stuff in a tube that's a metal tube, only open on one end. You light it like a... Sort of like a mini cannon.
They called it a hand cannon.
A hand cannon. And boy, I bet there was a lot of mistakes early on in this
stuff. Oh man. Can you imagine that going wrong?
Yes.
So easily.
I can. And it would, they would light it through something called a touch hole, and then there would be an explosion, create this hot gas that would send whatever they stuck inside there, which was a little round ball
yeah.
at the time.
Yeah.
It would send it out at decent speeds at first.
Fairly decent, yeah.
I mean, for back then, that was probably like, whoa, look at that hurling projectile.
Right. It, well, it was probably more like, magic, run.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's some, the man has a hand dragon. They didn't think to call it hand cannon yet. They probably called it a hand dragon.
Yeah.
And it was mostly, it produced a psychological effect because it wasn't very accurate. And like you said, it didn't really shoot it out at fast speeds.
Yeah, it would like, a knight's armor, it would like hit it and go plunk and then fall on the ground. And the knight would bend down and pick it up and put it in his little satchel. And
then
he would
cut
go,
you in half.
Yeah, cut you in half with the sword.
Yeah.
So at first, not super effective.
No, but it inspired people to make this better. Like, we can do better with a hollow tube and a stick and a touch hole. So let's figure this out.
Yeah, if I may segue to the side here for a moment. This got me thinking today about battle and just warfare and weaponry and how it's still so basic. I mean, it's like super advanced now with how they do it, but Tuk-Tuk starts out by hitting another caveman in the face. Like, it's warfare start out with your fists. And then it transforms into, like, eventually someone uses a club, and they're like, hey, this implement is, like, way better than hitting you with my fist, because
right.
it's harder, and I can do more damage, and I can get a little further away from you. Then come, like, swords and things and lances, and they could get even further away. And the whole history of weaponry is about hurling bigger fists from longer distances. Whether it was the arrow, then later the bullet.
Right.
And now you have like ICBMs that are just like really, really, really big fists
right.
that you can fire from really, really far away.
I think the point you're making is that war, no matter how advanced we get, is really primitive.
It is.
It's a primitive idea.
I didn't know that was my point, but that's, I think it's spot on. All right, back to it.
Thank you for that.
Sure, I just
that was quite a segue.
I thought it was interesting.
You even asked if you could do it first. That was really formal.
Well, and each method was like a little bit further away, like right. arrows. Like, hey, we can get him further away. And then pretty soon it was bullets, and then it was like sniper rifles, yeah. and then it was missiles. And
now it's some guy sitting in Nevada shooting people in Afghanistan.
Yeah, with a on his computer.
Yeah,
it's pretty sad. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody, if you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Okay, so back to the musket. Right?
Yes.
We've gone from gunpowder to hand cannon, and now we're at the arquebus.
That's right.
Not arquebus.
The early 1500s, to be specific. And this actually had a shoulder stock, which was like a huge deal because it wasn't just a stick attached to this metal tube. Like, mm-hmm. you could actually aim this sucker now.
Right.
You could look down the barrel and point it at something.
And you could shoot it, and it would shoot a projectile. But again, still, the ultimate goal, the ultimate, the pinnacle of the battlefield was the horse-mounted knight in armor.
Yes.
And if that guy was wearing plate, the arquebus wasn't going to do it still.
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 Still a matchlock weapon, which meant you had to light a little thing.
Yeah. So you needed a touch hole of some sort, and you needed something like a smoldering piece of yarn, maybe.
Yeah, you needed something dry.
Right.
Which is a key that we will find out.
Right. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
Like when it's raining, your arquebus is not going to help.
But you know what works well in the rain?
What?
A sword.
It does, like the one that the horse-mounted knight in armor is using to cut you in half yet again,
exactly.
100 years later.
Yeah.
Right? So people are like, "This, we can make this work. This has got to work. We have to figure this out." And the Spaniards were the ones that came up with this new thing called the mosquero.
The sparrowhawk, or the boomstick. As I like to call it.
Yeah.
It was even longer barreled. It was really heavy. I looked up pictures of this thing. They actually mounted it on a little forked stick.
Yeah.
Like, sort of like Rambo. Actually, Rambo carried his.
His 50 millimeter?
Yeah, but that's supposed to be on a tripod.
Yeah.
You understand. But Rambo was so muscly
right.
that he could carry it.
Rambo and Charlie Sheen in Hot Shots.
Oh, did he use that too?
Yeah.
Because he was imitating Rambo.
Right.
Okay. So they used the forked stick to, like, hold it steady and to help them out. The French called it a mosquite. The English called it a musket.
A musket.
I think you see where we're going here.
Yeah.
It was also matchlock, but it was actually could fire something that would go through armor, finally.
And then all of a sudden, the knights are like, oh, man.
Shoot.
I'm in trouble.
We're done.
And they actually did fade from the battlefield after that.
Yeah, thanks
with
to the gun.
With the mosquito, the mosquite, or the musket.
Yeah, and we cover that in the Knights podcast, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We totally did. So then they're like, okay, we figured it out. We got the knight down. The problem is like this thing requires a forked stick to aim.
Yeah, it's like 20 pounds.
Yeah, and you need a pikeman, another soldier, who has an 18-foot spear
yeah.
to protect you while you're reloading.
I would want two pikemen.
Yeah, well, I think you probably had your own little formation because you were so important.
Sure.
You could just stand back and shoot a knight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to give you as many pikemen as you asked for if you knew how to shoot one of those things.
With your hand dragon. Exactly.
So they're like, okay, we've got it. Now all we have to do is refine it. And one of the first refinements they made was to make it a flintlock.
Huge.
Yeah, so now you didn't have to carry a smoldering piece of yarn any longer.
That's right. Flintlock worked in the rain because it would strike a piece of flint against steel,
yep.
producing the spark instead of needing that open flame or the smoldering yarn.
Right.
Did they really use yarn?
They would use like something akin to yarn.
Okay.
It probably was yarn, but they spelled it with an E on the end.
Gotcha. Yarny. So all of a sudden you could shoot it in wet weather, which was awesome. And because the knights have sort of gone the way of the dodo, mm-hmm. it didn't have to be a 2-inch iron ball
right.
that you're shooting.
So that means that the gun itself can be smaller.
Everything can be smaller and lighter.
Right.
Very big deal.
So now we're starting to see like the kind of thing that the Minutemen used in colonial America.
That's right.
For those of you into that era, you'll know what I'm talking about. and then they also got rid of the pikemen by attaching a bayonet to it.
Yeah, I don't know about that. They said that rendered pikemen like unnecessary, but I would still rather have another dude with an 18-foot lance than me with my bayonet on the end of my rifle.
But you might like to have that, but your field commander would rather have another guy with a musket and a bayonet.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Get rid of the pike, give him a musket and a bayonet instead, and all of a sudden you got two people shooting fire.
Yeah, good point. So they still called it a musket.
Yeah, and technically anybody who had a musket and used a musket in battle was a musketeer.
I bet a lot of guys like to throw that word around back in the day, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm a musketeer.
Right.
And then the other guys would say, you're not a real musketeer.
Right.
a real musketeer, Josh, as we mentioned earlier, personal household guards of King Louis the, what is that, 13th?
Yeah. And apparently was he the one who founded it?
Yeah, he formed the guard officially in 1622.
The musketeers of the guard. Like, they had to add the extra couple words so that you didn't just think they were some schmoes with a musket.
Exactly, because everyone with a musket at that point is, like we said, bragging about being a musketeer.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because this is, like, high technology at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it stayed that way for a century. Like, yeah. From the musket, the flintlock musket that any infantryman could carry with the bayonet mm-hmm. Was introduced at the beginning of the 18th century and, like, all the way up to the 19th century. Like, that is what people used.
Yeah, and then that just
like
became
the AK.
A rifle. I mean, it's not...
Sure.
I mean, it changed somewhat, but, like, as soon as China invented gunpowder, it was all over.
Yeah.
People would be dying left and right.
Yep.
Sadly.
Yeah.
All right, so these are, like we said, these were... sort of like special forces, secret service, the private guardians of the king and his family.
Yeah.
Very important because in France during the 17th century, the early 17th century, it wasn't like a party going on back there.
No, but and actually...
A lot of troubles.
Louis XIII, his father, Henri IV, I believe, was assassinated. And Louis XIII he ascended to the throne. He became king at age 9.
I was like the boy kings that cracks me up.
Yeah. And he had like a child bride, Anne of Austria, I believe her name was. And I guess overseeing this whole thing was a guy named Cardinal Richelieu.
Yeah.
So at this time, and this was, I think, fairly correct, there was a lot of internal civil strife in France.
Religiously based.
Yes. The French were also battling the Habsburgs of Austria. And within his own house, Louis XIII was having to worry about the Machiavellian, which was new at the time, mm-hmm. machinations of Cardinal Richelieu, his basically his Dick Cheney.
Yeah, but a Dick Cheney with, like, an eye on the throne.
Yes. So his Karl Rove.
Yeah. It's very, it's very Games of Throney.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched that or read it, but...
No. I've heard of it, though.
Yeah.
I've seen... There's like a throne made of swords. Done.
It's really good stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, so the musketeers were there. They're guarding the king. A lot of religious upheaval.
Yeah, that was the big one.
Yeah, French Protestants saying, we don't like you Catholics. Catholics are saying, we don't like you Huguenots, which were the French Protestants.
Right.
And so there was a lot of warring going on. So the king needed these, like... super specialized, and these dudes were, you know, they were bad.
Yeah.
They were like the tough guys of the time.
Right.
Even though they were dressed up in frilly clothing.
It's true.
That apparently struck fear into the hearts of their enemies.
Yeah. They're like, look at the deep blue, that gold embroidery.
But they were highly trained, and their morale, or their esprit de corps, mm-hmm. was legendary.
Yeah.
Evidently.
Well, they were also... expert swordsmen. They were called musketeers, and they knew what they were doing with a musket.
Sure.
But day to day, they had a sword by their side, and they could take your head clean off with it.
Yeah,
and
that's,
they did.
In the book, you're going to see a lot more sword fight, mm-hmm. and in the movies, they've adapted than any kind of musket play.
Yeah, supposedly in the book, muskets are just, they show up a few times. They're only fired a few times, but the rest is all swords and swashbuckling.
But they were still musketeers.
Right. So, and the reason, again, they were musketeers, because this was cutting-edge technology at the time, and if you were somebody who was really proficient with a musket, you were somebody special.
Yeah, you also had to be, you didn't have to be, but it helped out if you were an aristocrat, a nobleman. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to be loaded, but you had to kind of run in those circles.
Right.
Or you're never going to get picked up.
Yeah.
To be one of the, what was it, 150 to 300
yeah, that's
at a
the,
time?
That's the most and the least they ever had operationally. And they were actually, like, this is real life we're talking about.
Yeah.
They were formed in 1622, I believe.
Yeah.
And they ran all the way into the, until 1816.
Yeah.
When they were disbanded due to a lack of funding.
I know. And I saw they rebanded a couple of times after in mm-hmm. subsequent years and then disbanded again. And
yeah.
then eventually they all went on to solo success.
Yeah.
As artists, entertaining, recording artists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Aramis, he had a nice line of deodorants and personal fragrances.
Did he?
Yeah.
So now can we talk a little bit about the book and Alexander, what do you call him? Dumas?
Dumas.
Very nice. Paris, 1820s. Very popular. John Grisham-like in his output.
Right.
The swinging Paris scene of the 1820s.
Yeah.
So he was turning out books, like he had people writing stuff for him.
He was like the Andy Warhol of his time. Like he would have people say, like, here's the structure of the book you're about to write. And he would sit down and write it. Research, tone, chapter ideas. He had assistants for everything. And he would just crank this out like it was an assembly line.
Well, they were hugely popular.
Yeah, definitely were.
But historians say don't knock him because he also had the goods as a writer.
Right, exactly. And that's just his prolificness alone is pretty awesome. But then if you combine the idea that he was actually good at what he did,
yeah,
that's staggering. Like his collected works, his unabridged collected works, fills up 300 volumes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And like some of it's really great. Like if you read The Three Musketeers, you're like, wow, this is pretty cool. This is it's neat. It's interesting. It's engrossing.
Yeah. And the lovemaking.
Right. Ooh. It's hyperlinked all over the place.
So do we get specific about the real D'Artagnan's musketeer life?
A little bit. We said that he came from Gascony.
Yeah.
A little bit before, or was it after? No, he was after.
He came on.
He was set in the novel.
Yeah, he came on in 1632, which was a little later than the fictional version. And served under Louis the 14th.
Mm-hmm. The Sun King.
He was the Sun King?
Mm-hmm.
You know a lot about French history.
Well, I went to Versailles once.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. I never made it there.
I didn't make it inside, but, oh, I went to Versailles.
Oh, you tried, though.
Right.
That's an ugly incident.
Let me in.
And he actually, the real D'Artagnan, became the commander of the musketeers and was killed in 1673.
Yeah.
And apparently the three dudes were also based on real guys, right?
Right. I don't know if their names were dead on, but they're pretty close approximations in the book. And so, like you said, like this book was hugely popular. It was first serialized in the French magazine Le Siècle. Le Siècle.
Very nice.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But in 1844, and like you said, he was really hitting the romantic period.
Yeah.
And everybody loved it. So they took the serial and put it into a book. That's why a lot of the chapters have like cliffhangers.
Oh, okay.
Because it was published, it was serialized in a magazine.
Well, I think he started out, didn't he start out as a playwright?
Yeah.
Okay, which makes sense with the whole cliffhanger thing.
Right. So he writes, never really gets the respect that some of his contemporaries, like Victor Hugo,
sure,
got, or Emile Zola.
Right.
And it wasn't until 2002, in this possibly was because he had mixed race heritage.
Oh, really?
His grandfather was a French nobleman. His grandmother, I believe, was a Creole woman from Haiti.
Oh, that's right.
So he had African in his blood.
Yeah.
Now, in France, it's not anything like it is in the United States, where it's like that idiotic one-drop rule.
Right.
But apparently it was enough. There was enough racism in France that, like, it wasn't until 2002, when Jacques Chirac was president, that he was moved, his remains were moved to the Pantheon alongside, like, Zola.
Really?
And
it took
Hugo.
That long?
Yep.
Huh.
So, a lot of people say, well, no, he was a hack. He was just a hack, you know? Like, he was
right.
Good, but he was still a hack, and that's why people didn't take him seriously. But it's also possible it's because of his racial background as well.
I think that, and this bodes well for us, I think hundreds of years on, even prolific hacks can be looked upon as, you know, geniuses.
Right.
So
that's pretty much what I've been betting on since we first sat down
pretty
and
much.
Started doing these.
Yeah.
Just somebody out there, somehow society is going to just devolve and they'll be like, these guys are, it'll be like Idiocracy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's our meal ticket.
Right, but more entertaining.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right.
The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
You got anything else?
No, I mean, the rest is history. Great book.
Yeah.
And I love the story behind the musket and the musketeers, the real life thing.
That was great.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, I like my history.
If you want to learn more about Alexandre Dumas and the musketeers and muskets, you can type musketeers, M-U-S-K-E-T-E-E-R-S, into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com, which means it's time for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this... clarification on that I actually feel pretty bad about.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm going to call it.
Okay.
Josh and Chuck just started listening to Stuff You Should Know, and I love the podcast, but I was recently listening to your Samurai podcast, and I couldn't help but notice that you gave credit to George Lucas when talking about a Darth Vader mask and its relative similarity to the Samurai Kabuto mask. Remember that?
Yes.
I thought I would point out that Mr. Lucas, although responsible for Star Wars, was not responsible for the design or the conception of Vader's mask. Credit for that should go to the great concept artist Ralph McQuarrie, who's used future aesthetic, as in like old-timey looking.
Yeah, no, I love that aesthetic, seriously.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's one of the reasons for the iconic status of Star Wars, and really informed like every great space movie since, don't you think?
Yeah, like think about it, like the like a spaceport or something like that. Like all the jet engines are kind of battered and beaten and everything. And every once in a while, I'll go to an airport and look and see the planes are just like that, and I'll just see exactly what the guy was doing and how well they nailed it.
Agreed. So McQuarrie, hats off to you, and Geiger.
Oh yeah, H.R. Geiger is awesome.
I'm gonna take my hat off to you too as well, sir. And then continue with the email.
Okay.
Lucas's original script did not put Vader in a mask at all, evidently, and it was Ralph's idea to put a frightening helmet on the Sith Lord. McQuarrie recently passed away, and it would be a shame if his contributions to popular culture were not recognized. And Joe from San Francisco could not agree more, and I'm glad you pointed this out, because movies, although it is a director's medium, are made up of many, many, many people's talents contributing to the end result of the film, and people like McQuarrie are often overlooked with something as iconic as Darth Vader's mask.
That's awesome.
So thank you for that, Joe from San Francisco.
Well done, Joe.
Here's to you.
Well, yeah, if you have an awesome correction for us, or just a clarification, or if you want to tell us that we were utterly and completely wrong about something, we're always open to hearing that kind of thing, especially if you're nice. What's wrong with being nice? Nothing.
There's no point in being mean.
You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com at Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.